This is the Indo-Pacific Debrief by Atlas News. Hello and welcome to the Indo-Pacific Debrief by Atlas News, where we take the region's top stories and analyze and review their broader context. In this episode, we'll be discussing India's recent strategic move in the Indian Ocean. On March 24, 2024, the Indian Navy announced the first ever deployment of a Cavalry-class submarine to Campbell Bay, located in the Nicobar Islands. The Nicobar Islands are a strategically placed archipelago in the Bay of Bengal, about 8-10 miles southeast of mainland India. They are considered a union territory under India's central government and have been since 1956. The islands, along with the nearby Andaman Islands, comprise a chain of over 800 islands, although only a handful are inhabited. Notably, the Nicobars already house a naval base, INS Jarawa, established in 1964 at the capital, Port Blair. The deployed submarine belongs to the Cavalry class, also known as Project 75. These are diesel-electric submarines, a joint effort between French Naval Group and Indian Mazagon Dock Limited. India currently operates 5 Cavalry class submarines with plans to build at least 3 more. The first submarine of this class, INS Cavalry S-21, was commissioned in 2017. Cavalry class submarines are known for their stealth and combat capabilities. They are equipped with a mix of weaponry, including torpedoes, anti-ship missiles, and mines. Notably, these submarines also boast an air-independent propulsion, AIP, system, allowing them to stay submerged for extended periods without needing to surface for fresh air. Analysts consider the Cavalry class to be some of the most potent submarines in the Indian Navy. Their primary function is to neutralize enemy ships, but they are also multifunctional, playing roles in anti-surface warfare, intelligence gathering, and mine laying. The deployment of this submarine to Campbell Bay holds significance beyond its military muscle. The Andaman and Nicobar Islands are strategically crucial for India's presence in Southeast Asia. The island chain allows them to monitor vital sea lines of communication, SLOCs, that pass through the Malacca Strait, a vital passage connecting the Indian and Pacific Oceans. Developing these islands further strengthens India's control over access to these choke points and grants them access to natural resources in the region. This move comes amidst China's growing presence in the area, and India seems to be strategically responding by bolstering its own defenses. Docking a submarine at Campbell Bay allows for faster deployment and quicker response times in case of any conflict. Overall, India's deployment of a Cavalry-class submarine to Campbell Bay signifies a calculated move to solidify its strategic presence in the Indian Ocean. This development is likely part of a larger strategy to counter China's growing influence in the region. Next, we'll delve into the ongoing political impasse between the autonomous region of Bougainville, Arobe, and Papua New Guinea, PNG, regarding Bougainville's independence. A referendum held in Bougainville in 2023 overwhelmingly favored independence. However, its ratification by the PNG parliament has been delayed due to several disagreements. A major sticking point is the voting threshold required for ratification. Bougainville seeks a simple majority vote, whereas PNG insists on a two-thirds majority. This disagreement highlights the broader tension between the two sides. While the referendum result is a key step, it's not the only path to independence for Bougainville. Ezekiel Massat, Bougainville's Minister for Independence Implementation, suggests the island chain could bypass PNG's parliament altogether. They are currently drafting their own constitution, which could potentially be used to declare independence unilaterally. Massat cites PNG's own 1975 independence from Australia as a precedent for this approach. However, both sides seem to prefer a negotiated settlement. Massat has proposed bringing in a neutral moderator to help bridge the gaps and facilitate discussions. Key issues include the ratification process and PNG's alleged lack of progress on agreed-upon steps towards independence. The situation raises concerns about a potential return to violence. Both sides likely remember the brutal civil war fought in the 1990s and would likely avoid open conflict. However, PNG might resort to a blockade if Bougainville declares independence without parliamentary approval. Conversely, Bougainville could see renewed hostilities if they believe PNG is deliberately obstructing their independence aspirations. Beyond the immediate political issues, Bougainville's potential independence has wider geopolitical implications. China's growing influence in the region is a significant factor. Bougainville, seeking to rebuild its economy, might be particularly receptive to Chinese investment through the Belt and Road Initiative, BRI. This could lead to unsustainable debt burdens, similar to those experienced by other BRI recipient countries. Additionally, China could establish diplomatic relations with an independent Bougainville, further expanding its influence through investments, cultural exchanges, or even military ties. Overall, the situation in Bougainville remains unresolved. While the path forward is unclear, it's certain that the outcome will have a significant impact on the future of the region and the wider geopolitical landscape. Now, our focus today shifts to the complex relationship between the Chinese Communist Party, CCP, and organized crime groups in the South Pacific. There have been growing concerns about the CCP leveraging these criminal networks to further its own agenda in the region. Traditionally, the CCP's United Front Work Department, UFWD, has been used to expand Chinese influence through political channels. However, reports suggest the CCP might be employing a more clandestine strategy by working with organized crime figures. A recent investigation by Australian media outlet Nine, backed by intelligence sources, points to a specific example in Fiji. They identified Zhao Fugang, owner of a major hotel chain, as a potential CCP agent with connections to Fiji's political elite. Zhao is also alleged to be a prominent crime figure involved in drug trafficking and other illegal activities. This case raises serious questions about the extent of Chinese organized crime's influence in the Pacific. It's not an isolated incident. A 2022 report exposed similar tactics used in Palau, another strategically positioned island nation. Here, the CCP allegedly collaborated with criminal groups to establish businesses like illegal gambling dens, often employing hundreds of Chinese workers. The report by the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, OCCRP, suggests these activities happened with the knowledge of the Chinese government. Some experts believe the CCP is either turning a blind eye to organized crime's activities or even actively supporting them. This is despite a 2018 crackdown on organized crime launched by CCP leader Xi Jinping, which officially emphasizes combating corruption and protecting officials from criminal influence. So, why would the CCP risk its image by associating with organized crime? The answer seems to lie in plausible deniability. By using these criminal networks, the CCP can achieve its goals without being directly linked to potentially controversial activities. These activities could involve bribing officials, conducting espionage, exerting political influence, or even intimidation tactics. The involvement of CCP-aligned organized crime poses a significant threat to the stability and sovereignty of Pacific nations. These criminal networks can destabilize economies, undermine democratic processes, and erode public trust in governments. The situation in the Pacific highlights the complexities of China's growing influence in the region. While some cooperation can be beneficial, the potential dangers of CCP involvement with organized crime necessitate close monitoring and a coordinated response from Pacific nations and their allies. Now, we'll discuss South Korea's significant development in its military aviation sector. The South Korean Defense Acquisition Program Agency, DAPA, recently greenlit the production of the KAI KF-21 Boramae fighter aircraft. This marks a crucial step for South Korea's goal of self-sufficiency in its national defense. The project, valued at $5.8 billion USD, will see aircraft production roll out over the next 4 years, from 2024 to 2028. The exact number of jets in this initial batch remains undisclosed, though estimates suggest it could be around 20. This falls short of the initial projections of 40 aircraft, possibly due to the need for further testing on some key features. DAPA has requested additional testing on the KF-21's Active Electronically Scanned Array, AESA, radar system and air-to-air missile capabilities. Despite these adjustments, officials remain confident that production is on track. The South Korean Air Force is expected to receive its first KF-21 by 2026, with a goal of acquiring a total of 120 by 2032. There are also plans to develop export models of the KF-21 in the future. The KF-21 is designed to replace South Korea's aging fleet of McDonnell Douglas F-4, Phantom IIs, and Northrop F-5EFs. It boasts advanced features like twin GE Aerospace F-414 engines, a 20mm Vulcan rotary cannon, and the capacity to carry a diverse array of weaponry, including air-to-air missiles, air-to-surface missiles, anti-ship missiles, precision-guided bombs, and regular bombs. While not a true fifth-generation fighter due to the lack of internal weapon bays, the KF-21 offers superior stealth capabilities compared to most fourth-generation jets. This design, developed with assistance from Lockheed Martin and incorporating aspects of the F-35, positions the KF-21 as a formidable force in the region. Simulations conducted by the South Korean Air Force indicate that the KF-21 outperforms the F-16 in crucial areas like range, airframe lifespan, and avionics. The KF-21 is envisioned to operate alongside the F-35s already in the South Korean arsenal. The decision to domestically produce the KF-21 holds several advantages for South Korea. Firstly, domestic production reduces reliance on foreign suppliers, ensuring continued aircraft construction even if global shipping is disrupted. Secondly, the KF-21 bolsters South Korea's air defense capabilities, providing a significant edge against potential regional threats. The future development of the KF-21 platform also holds promise, with the possibility of upgrades and advancements that could elevate it to a true fifth-generation fighter. Finally, the potential for exporting the KF-21 opens doors for South Korea's military industry. Countries like the Philippines, Indonesia, a project partner, and even nations like the United Arab Emirates have expressed interest in acquiring this advanced aircraft. South Korea's launch of KF-21 production marks a significant milestone in the country's pursuit of self-reliance in its national defense. This domestically produced fighter jet not only strengthens South Korea's air power, but also opens doors for future partnerships and advancements in the nation's aerospace industry. Our focus now shifts to Japan's recent announcement regarding upgrades to its national infrastructure for defense purposes. On March 27th, Japanese officials unveiled a plan to upgrade 5 airports and 11 ports across the country. This move is likely to be approved by the government in the coming fiscal year, with a budget of $230 million USD allocated for the initial phase. These upgrades are seen as a response to the growing security challenges in the Indo-Pacific region. By fortifying its infrastructure, Japan aims to bolster its defense capabilities and shorten response times in case of military emergencies. The designated airports will be equipped to accommodate fighter jets and other essential military aircraft. Upgraded ports will be able to handle larger vessels such as destroyers and cruisers. This improved infrastructure will also be used for conducting military exercises. The locations chosen for these upgrades are strategically significant. 5 airports are spread across Nagasaki, Fukuoka, Okinawa, and Miyazaki prefectures. Among the 11 ports, 5 are located in the northern island of Hokkaido. 4 more are scattered across Kochi and Kagawa prefectures on Shikoku Island, with the remaining 2 situated in Okinawa and Fukuoka prefectures. Analysts believe this move will significantly benefit Japan's self-defense force. Improved infrastructure will allow for faster deployment of troops and equipment in response to potential conflicts or regional threats. Additionally, it would make the country less susceptible to invasions. The upgrades could also prove crucial in the event of missile attacks. With improved facilities, military personnel would be able to evacuate civilians more efficiently and provide swifter medical aid. There's also a potential benefit for the existing U.S. military presence in Japan, particularly in Okinawa. These upgraded facilities could be used by both Japanese and American forces if necessary. Beyond military preparedness, there are civilian advantages to this project. Upgraded infrastructure could serve as crucial support during natural disasters like earthquakes and tsunamis, which are a frequent threat in Japan. Furthermore, strengthening defenses in the southern islands is seen as a strategic measure against potential conflicts with China. Overall, Japan's plan to upgrade its airports and ports signifies a proactive approach to national security. These improvements will enhance Japan's ability to respond to military threats and natural disasters, ensuring a more secure future for the nation. Next, we'll delve into recent developments in Taiwan's military exercises, highlighting their focus on decentralized operations. On March 26th, Taiwan conducted a large-scale joint air defense exercise involving its Air Force, Army, and Navy. This exercise, codenamed Integrated Air Defense Operation Plan Exercise, aim to test the military's ability to coordinate and deploy forces effectively in response to air threats. It included various aircraft, missile systems, artillery units, and naval vessels. Taiwanese officials emphasized that this exercise is part of a broader effort to intensify military training due to the growing number of Chinese military incursions near Taiwan. The ultimate goal is to enhance Taiwan's ability to respond to potential threats, defend its airspace, and safeguard the nation. Beyond this recent exercise, Taiwan has also been conducting tabletop war games, focused on transitioning from peacetime to wartime scenarios. These simulations involve various units working together to develop and execute plans in real time. The emphasis is on fostering adaptability and ensuring commanders can make sound decisions even under pressure. Analysts suggest that these exercises hold greater significance than just responding to immediate threats. They represent a long-term strategy by Taiwan's military to adopt a decentralized command and control, C2, structure. There are several reasons behind this strategic shift. A decentralized C2 system aims to be more resilient against attacks, both physical and electronic. It distributes decision-making authority throughout the military hierarchy, making it less vulnerable if communication systems are disrupted. Additionally, a decentralized structure allows for faster and more adaptable responses to evolving situations on the battlefield. The Taiwanese exercises incorporate real-world limitations and battlefield conditions to test commanders' decision-making abilities and their capacity to adjust plans dynamically. This focus on empowering lower-level commanders aligns with the principles of mission command, a military doctrine that emphasizes initiative, independent thinking, and clear communication of objectives. By adopting a decentralized C2 structure and fostering stronger decision-making capabilities at all levels, Taiwan's military aims to become more agile and survivable in the face of potential conflict. This approach strengthens Taiwan's ability to defend itself and act independently in the event of communication disruptions or critical system failures. And finally, we'll be delving into recent news about satellite imagery revealing a mock-up of a key area in Taiwan's capital city at a Chinese military training site. We'll explore the context behind this development, the reactions from Taiwan, and what this might mean for the ongoing tensions between the two sides. The satellite images show a replica of Taipei's Boai Special Zone, a restricted area encompassing the presidential office building and other crucial government buildings. This isn't the first time China's People's Liberation Army, PLA, has built mock-ups of Taiwanese targets. Previously, they constructed a replica of the presidential office building at another training base in Inner Mongolia. Taiwan's defense minister acknowledged that any country can build mock-ups for training purposes. He emphasized that Taiwan also conducts similar exercises. Notably, he pointed out Taiwan's defensive posture in the Taiwan Strait and surrounding islands. However, he did acknowledge that the mock-up signifies China's focus on achieving unification. A former Taiwanese legislator offered a different perspective. He believes the PLA is unlikely to launch a swift surprise attack due to Taiwan's strong air defenses. Instead, he sees the mock-up as part of a psychological warfare strategy to pressure Taiwan into unification. This strategy, he suggests, involves presenting Taiwan with a choice: fight or negotiate. While the mock-up suggests the PLA is training for missions against key Taiwanese leadership or military sites, it doesn't necessarily predict an imminent invasion. The muted reactions from Taiwanese officials also suggest they view this development with a degree of pragmatism. However, there are some interesting details about the Alxa Left Banner mock-up that differ from previous ones. This particular replica seems to be situated within a bombing and gunnery range. This suggests the PLA might be training for airstrikes, or using the site for special operations forces to practice calling in airstrikes or gathering intel for such attacks. Alternatively, it could be used for joint exercises between the PLA Air Force and special operations forces, involving both airstrikes and ground assaults. The existence of this mock-up serves as a reminder of the ongoing tensions between China and Taiwan. While its precise purpose remains unclear, it highlights China's military preparedness and its focus on achieving unification. We'll continue to monitor this situation and provide updates as they become available.